Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in. Hour number two, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We're rolling through the Friday edition of the program. Always want to encourage you. I mean, it has been an unbelievably wild week, even by new standards of wild weeks, which we have had a lot of over the past 18 months or so, past several years, to be frank. Go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss anything. We have got a loaded program rolling through the final 2 hours of the week here, but a ton of really great interviews so far this week. Really great discussion from myself and Buck Sexton. You can just type in Clay or Buck. That's how popular the podcast has gotten. If you just type in our first names, Clay or Buck, on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere out there, you can get access to the entirety of the program. Encourage you to make that choice. You can also go give us a 5-star review, and our boy Dub will be checking those out for you. We are joined now, I believe, by Jack Carr, former Navy SEAL sniper and task unit commander who has served in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Jack, we appreciate you joining us and all your service. And I know this has been a tough week for many people, both in uniform and out of uniform. I want to start with this question for you. When you saw the report that we had turned over the names of Americans and American allies in Afghanistan to the Taliban, your reaction was what?
Well, it was a long list of errors that is going to impact those on the front lines and not so much those from temperature-controlled offices in the Pentagon or in and around Washington, D.C. We just handed over the names of U.S. citizens, maybe some people that helped us over the last 20 years, to the enemy that we've been engaged with on the battlefield for those 20 years, and then we're asking them permission, if it's okay, to get those people out. They get to decide whether they can let these people through to an airport as we try to evacuate them in a way that is obviously a disaster. And once again, it's those frontline E1s, E2s, E6s, O1s, O2s, those junior level officers and enlisted that are out there in the meat grinder making the best of a chaotic, violent, dynamic, fluid situation, just like they have for the last 20 years. So I'd like to say that I was surprised by that, but unfortunately, looking at the last 20 years as my guide, it is not that shocking. It's just heartbreaking, devastating, unfortunate.
Jack, it's Buck. I want to know what you think we, the United States government military, could do to try to enhance the security situation on the ground, because all we've really heard from the Biden administration is essentially we're reliant on the Taliban, and it's in their interest, it's in the Taliban's interest to prevent this from happening again. It's already happened once. Obviously, everyone hearing that is thinking to themselves, well, that's a horrible situation to be in. That's not something that makes us feel good. Do you see a way to at least make that situation a little bit less high risk for the Americans and SIV holders and others who are either trying to or have gotten into Kabul International Airport?
Yes, we saw that same sentiment echoed by the CENTCOM commander yesterday, talking about it being in the Taliban's best interest to let these people through, to put people through security screenings. But if you've seen any of these pictures, like we all have coming in, I mean, you're seeing these people crowding the gates, you're seeing them standing in sewage, you're seeing the babies handed over the walls to Marines that are manning those barriers. It's just chaos down there. And even when we had very robust security measures in place at a lot of our bases in Afghanistan and in Iraq, you would see these cars come in, you would see people come in, and that's a tough thing to do, even for our soldiers, to check out who has an S vest on, that truck coming in, it looks like that suspension is, it's a little heavy. Do I shoot? Do I not? What's going? I mean, it's tough for us who have protocols in place, who have ROEs in place, who are trained up. And now we're relying on the Taliban, our enemy, to not let other terrorist groups, warlords, somebody looking to take a shot to blow something up, to say, be able to get a little street cred by saying, hey, we kicked the Americans out of Afghanistan, just like they did with the Soviets and with the British way before that. So it's there are definitely things we can do. I mean, look at how much we have invested in our military since the end of World War II up to today. And then look at what we're doing. Look at who we are relying on. Once again, it's that rifleman. It's that Marine down there holding that M4 that is standing the guard, standing the watch, holding the line. Once again, with all those assets that American military has at its disposal, not in country. Air power out of there. Our intelligence apparatus dismantled, allowing the enemy to get right up close. No standoff between that frontline soldier and the person who might be wearing that S vest in a crazy dynamic situation. So there are definitely things that could be done both tactically and strategically, but unfortunately, it looks like we are just focused on this August 31st date and trying to scramble out of there as fast as we possibly can. It's a dark day for America.
There's no doubt about that, Jack. Question for you. We talked yesterday, and it seems like there's a clarity here that we are going to leave some Americans behind in Afghanistan. What do you think the chances are that we end up with some form of hostage-like situation after our troops are already off the ground and out of the country, and we may have to send people back in as you assess the situation on the ground right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's maybe it does fall back to whose best interest is it to have the United States either in or out of that country. So with the Taliban in charge, running the country, different warring factions in the mix there, terrorist organizations in the mix there, who is to benefit from holding on to these Americans and a lot not eventually allowing them safe passage out of the country? Or how can they spin this into an advantageous public relations campaign, of which they have proven themselves to be much better at than our public affairs officers in the military? So it's certainly a high probability that they could be used as bargaining chips for something else that the Taliban or one of these warring factions or terrorist group wants, or it's also possible that they just leave the country via other means later. So it's certainly a possibility that they could be taken hostage and be used as bargaining chips going forward. The point being, they should never be in that position to begin with. Once they shouldn't have been, as everything started to deteriorate, we should have hit these non-combatant evacuation plans and gone in, figured out where everybody was, brought them to a strategically advantageous point, not giving those points up and consolidating our forces at Kabul. But once we're in that position, now it's time to not leave these Americans behind. That's the last thing we can do to salvage some vestige of our dignity, is to go out, crush the enemy, get all our citizens out, and you know what, then reevaluate and hold people accountable, both in the military and bureaucrats, elected officials, who this has been like a slow motion train wreck.
I want to jump in on that, Jack.
And in the last couple weeks.
Sorry, Jack, about the accountability question, though. I think this is critical. You know, we've had friends like former Army Ranger 10th Mountain Sean Parnell on to talk about the boots versus the suits paradigm here, that this wasn't about what was done tactically on the ground during the war we're talking about now. This was about decisions from the top on down, and they've been catastrophic in recent weeks, recent months. We've all seen that. For everybody, we're speaking to Jack Carr, former Navy SEAL and author of the Terminal List series, which you should all check out. An excellent, excellent series of novels. The Devil's Hand is his latest. Jack, here is General Milley. I think this was in June during a hearing on Capitol Hill. The issue of Bagram Air Base, which many people who watch this closely say was among the most inexcusably stupid decisions made, to just sort of say, yeah, we're going to give up Bagram. Here's what General Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said in June.
So a couple of quick comments here on Bagram. Bagram is not necessary tactically or operationally for what we're going to try to do here with Afghanistan. Consolidate on Kabul in support of their government.
Not necessary, Jack. Consolidate on Kabul. Well, we did that, and now we see what happened.
Yeah, there's a difference between confidence and competence. And we've seen these generals get up for the last 20 years in front of Congress with their uniforms on, the stars on their shoulder boards, with the medals on their chests, and being very confident about we just need so many more troops, so many more resources, so much more funding, whatever it might be. We're about to hit our goals. That sounds very confident, but competence is lacking. And as you know, we talk about assets and liabilities, whether that's in the military, that's in the intelligence circles, that's in business or with your family. Who's an asset and who is a liability? And it seems like these senior level military leaders and our elected officials and bureaucrats are falling into this liability category. And for whatever reason, but we've had 20 years to look back on to evaluate their performance, and they continue to be promoted up the chain of command and then work after they get out with full pensions on the boards of these companies that are attached very directly to the defense industry. And we're going to see that again in this case. But he sounded very confident in that, but was that a competent decision? We're going to go back and look at it, of course, but it doesn't seem like giving up that base made sense. And for those who have been downrange in combat, you always want to improve your fighting position. And you can do that strategically, you can do that tactically. And it seems like we did not do that in this point. In fact, we did the exact opposite of improving our fighting position. We made it weaker at a time when we did not have all our citizens accounted for or out of the country. So it seems like we did things backwards, and we almost did this in a way like we couldn't have done it worse had we been actively trying to do it the worst way we possibly could.
Jack, last question for you, and we appreciate your time. Jack Carr, former Navy SEAL, he's done incredible work. I encourage you to check out his books as well. Reports now that maybe another terror attack is imminent. That's basically what has been told to Joe Biden. We heard that right before this attack that killed, it appears, over 200 people, including 13 American soldiers. How can we stop, if at all, another terror attack from happening before we get our troops out of that country?
Right. So the enemy now has seen a successful attack. Yeah, they can try to do the same thing again. What usually what they'll do is morph it a tiny bit, adapt, which we have proven. They prove a lot better at being adaptive than we are. They do it a little quicker than us because they're not a huge bureaucracy like we are. If they're operating in small cells, they can make those adjustments very quickly. So I would not be surprised if we saw something else, because as we know over there, these warlords, terrorist organizations, they're going to want to be able to say that, hey, we were the ones that got those final shots off. We kicked the Americans out of Afghanistan. So I see that as something that is a probability, just because of that culture over there who we're dealing with and what we've given them to work with, which is an awful lot. So obviously more standoff between our Marines, between our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and those crowds is of vital importance right now, not allowing those suicide bombers to get closer. But that's just basic. You don't need to be a student of military history or a military tactician to figure this stuff out. All you need is a little bit of common sense, and that common sense is severely lacking at our senior level leaders at levels. And then one more thing I wanted to say, point out, is that the president's daily brief is something that obviously one of the most highly classified documents in Washington, in the world. After this, we are going to need to see what was in those briefs leading up to this disaster. We have, I think, Obama declassified different President's Daily Briefs from the Kennedy administration, from Nixon, from Ford administration. We had one page in August of 2001 that was declassified by the Bush administration. We need to see these President's Daily Briefs leading up to this event, and we need to hold people accountable.
Former Navy SEAL Jack Carr, go check out officialjackcarr.com to get some of his excellent novels, which I believe are in progress, be made into some fantastic series on TV or movie. Jack, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for all you do.
Buck, if we've learned anything since 2020, it's there's nothing quite as important as a powerful immune system. And over 20 years ago, Dr. Dennis Black of Texas invented Texas Superfood, and it is the original superfood. He has been making sure that we get 55 vine-ripened fruits, vegetables, probiotic digestive enzymes, so you can build your body's defense from the inside out. Dr. Black tells everybody that the immune system's job is to detect, deflect, and destroy bacteria you come in contact with. And Texas Superfood, it will boost your immune system better than anything on the market. Buck, your grandmother, my grandmother, they told us to eat our fruits and veggies, but a lot of people, guess what, don't do it. That's why Texas Superfood is the safety net for the American diet. For over 20 years, they've been helping thousands and thousands of people get and maintain their best health, and now you can make sure you do that as well.
If you can't, won't, or don't eat all your fruits and veggies every day, Texas Superfood was made for you. Start boosting your immune system for under $2 a day. Go to TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. That's TexasSuperfood.com/buck or call 855-TEXAS-55. Welcome back to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. The left uses its power. The right sits around and says, I don't know, we don't want, you know, government to do things. So who needs to protect individual rights? Let's just let the left keep doing what it wants. That happens in a lot of places. It's not happening as much in some stalwarts of defending individual freedom despite the craziness of the lockdowns. Places like Florida and Texas are making good moves here, doing smart things about COVID, and yet they're up against the Democrats in those states. There are the almost entirely, you know, a handful of very red states with pretty small populations, but you've got Texas and Florida where they've got to work with the what is possible, not just in the legislature, but also with activist judges. Clay just sent this to me, and we are diving into it together in the break because we're always analyzing in real time. This is in the Wall Street Journal. Florida schools, COVID-19 mask mandates upheld by a judge. Here's a judge in Florida who says that school districts can impose mask mandates, and Governor Ron DeSantis overstepped his authority when he banned mask mandates. The judge sided with parents of school children who challenged a July executive order by DeSantis and a subsequent state rule that forbids school districts from implementing mask requirements that don't allow parents to opt out. Clay, apparently you can mandate masks, but you cannot mandate freedom from masks as a function of government authority in the state of Florida. This is activist judge bullcrap.
Yeah, and it's going to be appealed, I'm sure. But like this ruling just came down in the last half hour out of a Tallahassee court. And the way that I would think about this is, let's start here, and we're going to talk with Alex Berenson in the third hour. But there remains not a single scintilla or shred of evidence that masks on children makes them safer. For everybody out there who wants to listen to the experts or follow the science so far has been clear. Many European countries not requiring masks. The only large study in Georgia of 90,000 pupils found that there was no difference in terms of safety for masked or non-masked children. I think all of that is incredibly significant here. Also significant, Buck, what the governor of Florida is doing is not mandating that no mask can be worn. He's merely saying parents should have the choice to decide whether or not their kids wear masks. This is, I think, a flagrantly wrong decision by this Florida judge. What you got for us?
Clay and I are like special operations anti-mask brigade.
You know, man, yes. We're right at the front. There are not a lot of supporters for us right now in the media. That's the truth.
Rough greens, friends. The testimonials keep piling in from folks who are so happy. Here's Susan, who writes that her dog actually eats rough greens willingly. She loves it. I've tried many vitamin and probiotic supplements that she turns her nose away from and refuses, but Susan's dog is impressed by the, or rather, Susan is impressed by the ingredient list compared to other supplements, and her dog absolutely loves it. Rough Greens is a supplement we're adding to my own beloved Tallulah, the French Bulldog's food. Feel like you gotta see your dog do this. I'm telling you, you're gonna be in a much better place when your dog actually starts taking it. It's enzymes, probiotics, vitamins. The folks at Rough Greens are so confident your dog is going to love Rough Greens. They've got a special deal for you, our listeners. Go to roughgreens.com/clayandbuck. They'll send you the first bag free. All you pay is shipping. That's R-U-F-F, roughgreens.com/clayandbuck. roughgreens.com/clayandbuck.
Clay.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. As we roll through the Friday edition of the program, I want to let you know, by the way, Alex Berenson, who has become one of the only truth tellers in the media covering COVID madness, will join us in the third hour. And Buck and I are just talking about making him a regular third hour Friday guest because he's been so prescient. He's been so great at foretelling where we are headed just based on looking at the data and sharing those facts with you. And he is continuing to do a fantastic job of that. We talked as we finished off the last segment about the state of Florida case surrounding Ron DeSantis and whether or not he has the executive authority as governor to allow parents to make choices inside of schools as opposed to individual school districts enforcing a mask mandate. That is a legal case that we will continue to follow as it moves its way through Florida courts and potentially beyond. But in the meantime, there was a big decision that came down last night from the Supreme Court involving Joe Biden's attempt to put in place an eviction moratorium by an executive order as opposed to via congressional authority. And Buck Sexton, the Supreme Court finally slapped that down pretty aggressively, 6-3, said it was outside the scope of the president's authority, adding yet another defeat to an incredibly weak first 8 months in office for Joe Biden. The reason why this had to go all the way back to the Supreme Court was because Brett Kavanaugh didn't strike down this decision beforehand. And Biden himself, Buck, even said, hey, I think this is unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it anyway. And thankfully, the Supreme Court has stepped in now and struck this down by a 6-3 margin.
Can we just step in and focus on for 1 second? And Clay, very, very well laid out. And so I feel like we know the issues at play here and the structure of what exactly happened. Notice that the Democrat progressive impulse is, even if it's unconstitutional, let's just do it, man.
Yes.
Let's just see what we can get away with. Let's see if maybe activist judges will bail us out. Let's see if we can do this for as long as you want. Remember, there's always a process involved. So you can actually get your way often for a period of time because conservative constitutionalist judges tend to be less quick to pull a universal injunction, less quick to say, oh, I'm one federal judge and I'm going to override all federal policy, right? On the left, because they're activists sitting in judges' robes on the bench, they'll do these kinds of things and not think twice about it. This is what we're up against now when it comes to all aspects of COVID. They will do the things they want to do, even when they don't have the actual authority, but they will use the power in that way. And unless we have the willingness to use power to defend individual rights where possible, Texas, Florida, unless we actually do that, we are going to get steamrolled on all COVID restrictions and mitigations. And I mean, I get people writing into me. I'm sure you've seen the same thing, Clay, in your inbox. I'm not some big fat cat landlord. I'm not lighting my cigars with, you know, $100 bills. My retirement is the one property or the two modest properties I own that I get some income from. And I've been paying mortgages and tax and utilities for 18 months now. And they're saying, what the heck is going on? Oh, and of course, the government had like a $50 billion, whatever it is. I forget the exact number, so don't quote me on that. But it's, you know, tens of billions of dollars. I think that for the landlords, Clay, because they realize they're just stealing money from them, I think they've spent less than 5% of it so far. The government's not even good at giving people back the money that it stole from them to redistribute.
It's so frustrating as a small business owner, and as like you, Buck, some of the money that I made is rolled into real estate. Because this is probably psychological, but when you own an internet business, there's some part of you, at least me psychologically, that wanted to have hard, tangible, physical assets. And so I am a part owner of a variety of different buildings all over a variety of different states. And I'm not sitting around with $1 billion or $100 million in real estate assets. I'm like you and like a lot of people out there that when you're choosing where power is going to lie, to allow people to not pay rent while we still have the obligation to pay the mortgage, which is being paid based. It's just a fundamental, and this is a big issue with the Democratic Party in general right now. Every single year for the last decade plus, for sure, they have become less friendly to the idea of capitalism and less understanding of how business works. And thankfully, we at least have the Supreme Court finally, although I think Kavanaugh blew it in not striking this down back in the summer, which would have prevented this from happening. But we got a president who acknowledges that he's doing something unconstitutional, does it anyway, and unless we had the Supreme Court 3 weeks later to step in and slap him back down, we basically don't have a constitution.
Democrats like this. This is actually a replay of the Obama playbook. Remember, I've got a pen and a phone. Why did he talk about his pen and his phone? Because he wanted to go around the United States Congress, the legislative branch, once the 2020 thank you Tea Party massive wave came in, and he wasn't going to be able to get what he wanted anymore through the legislature, so he started these different executive orders. I mean, it was the Obama administration that tried to tell the Senate when it was actually in session. I mean, you look at some of the overreach, some of the clear destruction of the separation of powers because of the authoritarian impulse of Democrats. That was on display with Obama. You see it again with Biden. Here's the thing. Democrats like it. Even when they know it's wrong, even when they know it's a constitutional violation, they get joy out of the fact that it's, ha ha, our team is winning. We're going to do it anyway. So they won't pay a political price. Now, the courts have struck this down. By the way, the court also struck down earlier this week the remain. Well, they struck down the request for a stay of the lower court decision, right? Am I doing okay here,
Professor Clay? Procedurally, right. It gets confusing, right?
Yeah, so they struck down the lower court's demand, or rather, they struck down the demand for a stay from a lower court, basically saying that remain in Mexico policy for the border goes into place. It is going into place now. And they cannot just get rid of it. The Biden administration can't. But Clay, there's no feeling of remorse or even trepidation from Democrats when they do stuff like this. They want to force people to comply, and they want to use health policy as a cover for what's really a Marxist impulse here. Let's be honest. This is the Democrats pretending to be Robin Hood, steal from the rich, give to the poor. Although sometimes the people renting have more assets than the people they're renting from, so it doesn't even work out that way.
Well, this is also why I think the ultimate legacy of Donald Trump is going to be so wildly important, right? Because you got Gorsuch, because you got Amy Coney Barrett, and because you got Brett Kavanaugh. Buck, if Donald Trump is not president for the previous 4 years, make no mistake, the Supreme Court would have upheld the authority of this executive order that Joe Biden just made. I mean, this is why you need a backstop that is going to apply the law in an even and honest and transparent fashion. And it is why it is so wildly important that we ended up with those three justices on the Supreme Court. And I got to tell you, if you run a cell phone company and found out you could make your charges a lot lower, I had these guys look. This is great. I had the Pure Talk executives in my house this week, Buck, as you know, to talk about how much they value this audience and how much they want to make sure that they are incredibly trustworthy. I trust them with my own family cell phone plan, and it can save you up to $800 a year. You got an incredible Pure Talk offer here, Buck. Unlimited talk, text, 6 gigs of data, just $30 a month, and you can still have unlimited data and save a fortune. It makes a big difference for my family. My 13-year-old has got a Pure Talk phone. You can keep the same number you already have. Get whatever type of phone. He's got an iPhone 12 you want. How do you save money, Buck Sexton?
I mean, we're not the only Pure Talk customers here, by the way. Anthony in Cleveland, listening to News Talk 1100 there, switched from Verizon to Pure Talk 2 months ago. Anthony's very happy with the improved mobile signal strength and lower monthly cost of Pure Talk. So he's getting better service, better strength for his signal, and he's saving a whole lot of money. In fact, Pure Talk was awarded the top-rated cell phone service provider as rated by Consumer Affairs. All you have to do now, all right, this is so easy. from your cell phone, dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll save 50% off your first month. I mean, it's just a great savings. Trust us on this one. Dial #250, say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dial text message from Pure Talk. Closing the second hour, coming up into a big third hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck. I'm here in NYC, COVID Mania Central. And we've got my man Clay Travis out in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are talking to you all across the country. We're going to have Alex Berenson. For anyone who doesn't know, he is probably the most high-profile contrarian against Fauciism based on the data. I think that's a fair way. He's willing to say, hold on, little lab coat tyrant Fauci is actually not correct, and here's why. And he's been willing to say that all along. And so Clay and I have been putting him on for a long time. But it is Open Line Friday, 800-282-2882. Berenson, in just about 15 minutes or so, will be joining us right at the top of the next hour. Sharon in Brooklyn, New York, NYC in the house. What's up, Sharon?
Yes, hi. I'm a city employee, and regarding the vax mandate, I was told either I vax or I don't come back. And I just want to know, like, where do I start in terms of pushing back? I'm one person. We're all very much, you know, in our own little bubble. And I just want to know, like, where I even start. You know, this de Blasio is just dictating mandates, you know, playing with this communist agenda here. And I just, where do I go? What do I do?
What's your financial situation, Sharon? Because I think that's the first question that I would ask in general. If you didn't have your job tomorrow, would you be able to take care of your family? Would your overall lifestyle be able to continue in the same way? Because I think this is where the rubber meets the road, and that's the first question that I ask anybody on a situation like this.
But I think I would be, well, you know, when you're a DOE employee, it's you know, you have a pension.
Yes.
You know, they have a like this net. You're kind of tied into something where, like, the longer you work, the more, you know, the better your pension at the end. And I guess
I worked at the NYPD. I know that was the big thing, Sharon. I was a civilian contractor, terrorism expert working for Intel Division. But I just bring it up because I remember those guys. They work for 20 for their pension, right? So you know, you leave at 16 or 17 years or whatever. I mean, that's a huge, and I'm sure it's that way for a lot of other city jobs. Sharon, there's no, this is why I'm kind of shouting from the rooftops. We need people in positions of power in places across the country to start protecting under rights of conscience, almost like you're a conscientious vaccine objector, if you will, under rights of conscience, an anti-discrimination statute. We have to have people who say you can't be forced to get the vaccine. It won't happen in New York anytime soon, but if it would happen somewhere, Clay, at least we'd have the beginning of the resistance.
Yeah. And look, Sharon, my answer, and look, we can't tell you what to do, but Buck, what they're trying to do is paint people into a corner where they have no other option.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's so frustrating to so many people out there. If you are required to have your job, most people have to get out of bed every day and go to work in order to be able to live in their lifestyle as is. I'm going to be honest with you. I would go ahead and get the vaccine, right? I would not put myself into financial straits over this. This is my personal opinion. If you are fortunate enough to have financial stability and or you can go to another job because your job is somewhat mobile, I would use that as an option. Here's
now,
Clay, the other thing.
Can I just jump in to say that, I mean, you might have to get the vax at the next job, though, right? This is the thing. In New
York,
that's
the challenge.
They're going to keep chasing you. So, I mean, while I hear exactly what you're saying, Sharon, I think that you got to do what's best for you, and you can be the only real judge of that. But I think that, you know, take care of yourself and your family, and only you can really know what that means. I'm sorry you're put in this position, and this is why the tyrants all across the country are finding ways to force needles.
This is
into
one
arms.
Of the most common questions we get, Buck.
Yeah.
I mean, I get this, I bet, every day from tons of listeners.
I don't want people that work hard, did the right thing. You know, I don't want them losing their pensions. I'm sorry.
That's right.
I know, you know, I'd like to say, oh, but what about this? What about that? It's not going to change in New York. Brad in South Dakota, slightly different. Sharon, by the way, thank you for sharing your story. Brad in South Dakota, what do you got for us?
Hi, Clay and Buck. Love the show. Thanks for taking the call. I'm a retired inner city cop. Spent 21 years in an area near Los Angeles. had been shot at, punched, kicked, scratched, clawed, crashed into, was deployed to the LA riots in 1993. Like to offer a little perspective on the Babbitt shooting.
Yes.
Number one, this man is not a hero at all. In my opinion, and the opinion of every cop I know, he's a coward. No manual, no training ever would say in a crowded riot, disorderly situation like that, would you indiscriminately crank a round off into the middle of that crowd without knowing who you're firing at or what you're doing. And by the way, he claims he was there to protect, you know, the Congress people and this and that and the other thing. I got a question, gentlemen, and nobody's talked about this. Think about this for a minute. If that guy was really believing that, why crank only one round off? Why not kill every one of those people as they're climbing through the window?
Brad, this is what I've been saying. Based on, and you tell me, your actual retired law enforcement, based on the use of force justification here, he could have shot the six people up against that door, killed them too, right? What am I missing?
You're not missing anything, Clay. And that's the whole thing is it just disgusts me as a retired cop to hear this guy talk to himself as a hero. That's despicable no matter what the situation. And second, to hear others calling him a hero. He's not a hero. He's a coward. He panicked and he cranked the round off and he knew he did wrong. That's why he only shot one time.
Brad, really appreciate
the
important perspective. By the way, I know a bunch of law enforcement experts. I mean, people know I spent time at the NYPD. I got a career, now retired law enforcement officer as an uncle, cop, beat cop. And Clay, they're all saying the same thing. So people say, oh, this is a clear cut case. It absolutely is not a clear cut case of use of force. Let me also say one other thing. I have never, and nor has any conservative that I know, they do not celebrate when there's a lethal use of force. It's always a tragedy. There were people celebrating this guy as if, you know, he shot Osama bin Laden on social media yesterday. Leftists are psychopaths.
And the fact that he would even claim that he saved countless lives is 100% repudiated by what actually happened on that day. And we talked about this. Hardly anybody's even discussing this story because of the mess that's going on in Afghanistan and because of COVID. When we come back, I think he is the most interesting and has been proven to be the most often correct person who has been covering COVID since this madness began 18 months ago. Alex Berenson is going to join us and break down the very latest on the numbers. Israel, England, the declining efficacy of the vaccine, the booster shots. He told us all about that weeks ago. Where are we headed now? He is going to do, I think, a fantastic job helping us to close out the final hour of the week. Go subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for hanging with us.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.